and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 144, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask of Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man who basically described part of his vegetarian diet in some way to me earlier, it's Tony Esmond.
Hello.
Oh,
oh
God.
Now, dramatic pause.
Yeah. If anyone heard a zip do up then, we just have to
do
clarify.
Do up or do undo.
No, we just have to clarify. It's not Tony's trousers, but it is in fact the case for his microphone. And you're going to be messing about with that all show, aren't you?
I'll put it aside now. I'm not touching it again.
Well, that's, you said that
effect.
Before.
Yeah. The joke's on us because Tony doesn't wear trousers during the show.
Thank you very much.
Oh dear!
We get to see this in the webcam that's just pointing at his groin for the entirety of the show.
It won't move up.
Oh, now it is. It is not even 2 minutes into the show.
And this is a kids' comic we're talking about.
This is a show where we're talking about a kids' comic this week. Yes, this week. And you probably heard him just then. We are actually joined by one of the people behind the weekly kids' comic, The Phoenix. It's Mr. Tom Fickling. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having
Tom.
Me.
Hey, Tom. Good.
Greetings.
Thank you for being here. And as you can tell, who knows how this show's going to go, judging by what Tony just did.
Well, it's much more interesting than my normal night because we've got a two-month-old child and it's bed at 8 o'clock normally, so I'm getting to stay up late.
Get you.
Does this mean you're going to go slightly delirious as the show goes on?
Get no, I think I'll be all right. Like, talking to grown-ups is going to be... Well, I don't know yet.
Fuck them, mate. I'll tell you now.
There's going to be none of
You're
that.
You're not going to be sick on me, though. That's
well,
the
won't be the first time.
Oh, dear. You know what doesn't make me sick, though, Tony?
Oh, is it Comic House?
It is Comic House.
You make me sick.
Yeah, with my sick segues. Woo! Yes, as always, this show is brought to you by our lovely friends at ComicHouse.com. They help keep the lights on at Awesome Pod HQ. There's lots of conventions going on. Convention season is well underway now, isn't it, lads? There's lots. We're in the thick of it, and we're going to tell you more about where we're going to be later. Well, not later tonight. That would just be weird. We're talking conventions here. But if you can't make it to a convention, and you desperately need to get your fix of independent comics, then Comic House is the place to go. On the website, you'll find there's a huge library of comics that you can order printed copies from, and the money goes pretty much directly straight to the creators. Lots of creators that have an account and they set up, and that's an extra way to sell their comics. Plus, if you like to read your books digitally, then you really need to get the Comic House app. I know a lot of our listeners have already signed up for this. It's got a 14-day free trial, and basically for £3 a month you get access to all of the comics on the Comic House database, which is awesome, and there's loads of them, and they're adding all the time. Now, Dan, you're the man with all the info. Now, what have we got coming up now?
There's quite a few new titles, actually. We've got Flash Gordon from Dynamite. Friends over at Pipe Dream have uploaded the pull list. I've got Versus Alpha, 100% biodegradable. Punchline, The Hero Dies Alone. City of Filth, Dark Valkyrie, which looks great. There's loads of new titles that's been uploaded. So
have you got it on the screen at all? Have you had a look at the Flash Gordon comic? So
yes.
Page 2 is the best page.
That is the second time that you've brought up.
Are you making babies cry now? Having a go at me.
Yeah, I can remember this story from a while ago where Tony mentioned somehow he got his name on the credits of some Dynamite comics.
Yeah,
and they just ran it over and over in every
they
issue.
They just cut and pasted it into every comics. Brilliant.
You have just been copied and pasted into what is it, half a year or a year's worth of comics?
About a year's worth,
That's legend.
To be fair, I've worked in publishing and sometimes take a bit in there. He's like, well, that fucking bloke left months ago. He's still in the contacts.
It's quite wise because it got me to buy every comic and multiple covers of them. You know, it's quite wise of them. Yeah.
Did you
sales
buy
technique.
What, just to see your name? Is that?
Yeah, because I'm in it. Yeah, obviously.
Very specialised marketing technique of singling out one person. They should do like what Coke do, you know, and thanks to this year to Dan and print like 10 of those and get Dan's of the world to buy it, etc.
There's a lot more sort of varied names though. There's the days of just being boring names. There's all kinds of cool names. people are called Cucumber and Cheeseman and stuff now, aren't they? You know, so it's sort of, yeah.
There's someone called Cucumber.
Called Cucumber.
Yeah, my neighbour's kids are called Cucumber. Both of them.
One's Q, one's Cumber.
Yeah. They're twins.
The mum's name is Courgette. that sounds like a genuine name, which is terrible, isn't it? Basically, in a roundabout way, this is our sponsor ad. So,
yeah, well done. That went well this week. I think that went really well.
Go to comichouse.com and you get all your comics. And from everyone here at Awesome Pod HQ, big congratulations to Pete Jeanpaul and his family on the birth of their son.
Yay. Yeah, nice one.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, big congratulations. So he's been a bit busy recently, so we truly appreciate him getting any kind of information to us and supporting the show, as always. It's amazing. So thank you very much, Pete.
Yeah, he's everything, isn't he?
You know, you sent a link to another show, Tony, we've got mentioned on. They sang the praises of a Comic House on there.
They did, didn't they, this week? Yeah. That's very nice. They're very nice about our anthology.
Yeah.
Yes. Well. That was, what was the show again?
That Comic Smell.
Yeah,
really nice guys. Yeah. Scottish podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of Scottish podcasts that I'm listening to at the moment, which are rather good. Mm. What do you mean, oh, look at me?
Everyone said you're a xenophobe, but I don't believe them when they say that.
No. Oh, why is it character assassination every week? but not just that, it's just a different part of my character. What's it going to be next week?
Your feet.
Oh.
And then for the 3rd of June, I got your left ball penciled in.
Oh. You got it penciled in? Ooh.
Yeah, coloured it in. Did a little face.
And he's like worked up a meticulous plan to take apart each part of your personality. And
what number episode are you hoping that I'll actually crack?
August 5th.
Bloody hell. So put that date in your diaries, folks, because that might be the day where it all goes wrong.
What does cracking smash the place look like?
Yeah. Well.
What sound like? What does it sound like?
He'll throw all his curly whirlies out the window.
I think it'll sound like with that episode that didn't record.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bit raw nerve there. Sorry about that, Vince.
Yeah, sorry. It's a touching subject. That was
yet you bring it up whenever you feel like this.
I've only ever brought that this one time.
Yeah, whatever.
It's
a
mistake. I'm sorry.
I'm over. Yeah. It's fine.
The scars are healing on the wrists, aren't they?
We did get a message on Twitter, someone talking about it.
Yeah.
He had to be talked down.
You had to stroke your head for a while, didn't I? You had it in my lap, stroking your hair. It's nice.
Yeah. Sometimes I just let them talk, listeners. You just got to let them get out of their system, I find. If you don't engage it, they're sort of like a bullying T-Rex. If you pay no attention to it, then they'll just
T-Rexes aren't bullies.
The T-Rexes are the biggest bullies. They are bullies.
I've seen species diversity. I'm not into that.
No. This is crazy. Anyway, we're here to talk about comics. Anyway, in terms of going off the rails, that went pretty far this week.
That's right. Yeah. That was my favourite one for a while.
Yeah. That's what happens with every sponsorship ad. It's almost like a railway
track.
What
do they bother?
Yeah.
I don't know why they bother with us.
It is getting worse. That's what we said.
So off the rails that people will remember it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's the trick.
Exactly. Make it memorable.
It's very clever.
It's like We Buy Any Car. That advert is so bad, people remember it, isn't it?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Don't use another company's name. We don't get paid for that. They didn't pay us for that, did they?
I'll email them.
Yeah, do it now.
Okay.
Anyway, we're sure that many of you out there certainly know of the epic weekly comic known as The Phoenix. Yes. Mm. It's fighting the good fight and trying to get awesome characters, comic strips and activities into the hands of kids and adults on a nationwide scale. Because I know there's an awful lot of people that I know that read it as well. All you listeners out there, you know who you are. But what is it actually like to work in the world of comics publishing on that scale? Not only that, but to do a completely original comic full of brilliant independent creators and original characters. Now,
and a few deadline problems, I'm thinking, as well.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes. He's loud. The maniacal laugh of a man who may
that's
be slightly
just
broken.
Having a breakdown.
Yeah.
I'm laughing particularly because we've just had like something really big pull out of such a villa space.
Oh my word.
So it's cry laughing.
Yes. So if you've ever wondered what it was like to try and do this epic sort of job that the Phoenix is trying to do, this is the show to listen to. Because, and we've had a few of the creators who have worked within the pages of the Phoenix on the show before. We've had quite a few of them. From the likes of Jamie Smart, Zach Simmons-Hearn. Who else have we had?
Jess Bradley.
Yeah. That, yes, of course, Squid Bits, which is one of my favourite bits of the Phoenix. And many more. And so naturally, we want to go to the source of the awesome and find out what makes these crazy people tick. Or, like, how close to the edge they really are. So this is going to be part informative and quite therapeutic for Tom, I think, this week.
Yeah. I'll make it therapeutic.
So just to start us off, like, how did you get involved with the Phoenix, or how did it come about, Tom?
I wish I had a really cool story about being a self-starter, but the embarrassing truth is that it's a family business.
Okay.
So my dad is a children's publisher, but he's like a proper sort of entrepreneur, in the sense that he can come up with an insane mad idea and then convince loads of people who would otherwise think it's rubbish that it's the best idea in the world. And one of those ideas was the Phoenix. And he started it, and then I've sort of been working there almost pretty much since it began, basically. My mum used to be my boss, and my brother works there, and yeah.
So it really is a family, a proper family business.
Did you say to your mum, "You're not the boss of me," and she'd go, "Well, I am, actually"?
We've had a few conversations. Don't tell me what to do.
Oh. I mean, to go from that...
But she's not my boss anymore, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he just had to put that... He had to put that on the record.
I'm a big boy now.
Aren't we all?
So, yeah. So, it was... So, I'm incredibly lucky, basically.
Nice.
Right place, right time, right room.
Yeah.
That took a second to click there. That was good.
Yeah. But I mean, to go from that initial idea, I mean, you know, as crazy as it may sound, in the current climate, or the climate when the Phoenix first arrived, this was, you know, to go onto a nationwide marketplace where kids' comics and stuff like that was always, you know, the ones that are covered in plastic, they've got these horrible fake cheap toys. How much actual comic content is within those pages? Probably not that much normally, is it? I mean, I haven't read one of those in ages. But to then say, let's do the Phoenix and actually, you know, make a proper comic, how did that then develop from there? Because it's quite a big task, isn't it?
Well, have you heard of the DFC, which is the comic that we worked on before the Phoenix?
I have indeed heard of the DFC. The Phoenix is an evolution of the DFC, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So basically, like, the DFC, so the first mad idea was to try and do it with a big publisher. So we did it with Random House. And it was basically the same team of people who put it together, and lots of the same creators. So, you know, like, that's when we met Jamie Smart and Neil Cameron and Zach and the Etherington Brothers and all those people. And basically, it sort of got going, and that was when the first sort of version of Philip Pullman's John Blake was published, with John Aggs drawing it. And then we did that, and it was going really well, but it just happened to be 2007 or 2008, whichever year there was the one where everything fell to pieces. And basically, when Woolworths went down, like, all the big publishers basically just completely freaked out, because it was such a big part of the book selling market. And big companies like Random House, which obviously they've merged with Penguin now, but they used to be they've merged with Penguin, but they're still privately owned, so it's like the largest privately owned corporation in the world. I don't know if you've seen The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but like, the people who own Random House like live in a village like that. huge houses with a weird bridge, and you can't get there, and all the rest of it. Anyway, so they basically sort of shut all non-core business, of which obviously a weekly comic was one of them. So after 43 issues, it shut. Now, rather frustratingly, since then, everyone who was involved in the decision to shut it has since said that they really, really wish they'd kept it open. But I'm glad they didn't, because we basically went away and said, we still want to do this. And the idea came from basically my dad is a big comic fan, a big fan of stories, and grew up reading The Eagle and, you know, every big, you know, every comic that was around at the time. There were like 50 titles or something when he was a kid. You know, like The Bean and the Dandy and Whizzer and Topper and, you know, everything. And he just had always thought that that weekly comic experience had been so important for him. And he also happened to know that some of lots of the authors he worked with. So he's Philip Pullman's editor, has been Philip Pullman's editor for like 25 years. I don't know if you've read any of his books, but he's a big comic fan. And, you know, he... You know, the weekly comic experience for him is a really big part of his childhood and stuff. So, and there's lots of other writers like that. George R. R. Martin's talked about it. Derek Landy's a big kids author. He's talked about it. You know, lots of great people talk about that, that comic love as a kid being such a big part of their storytelling skill. Anyway, so he just thought that that should still exist. And we were looking at it, and there's no real reason why it didn't exist. It's really just sort of like market forces, not, you know, not because people decided they didn't like it. And so... as he does with these sort of decisions, he thought, this is a really good thing. I think I really like it. Ergo, lots of people will like it. yeah, and then so when the DFC shelves, it was pretty heartbreaking. And it took about a year to raise the money privately. And luckily found some people whose children happened to have sort of learned to read with the DFC, even in its very short life, and were sort of passionate about children's literacy. And that's really the impetus behind the Phoenix, was a kind of comics could be such a powerful tool for getting kids reading. Not in that kind of overtly educational way, just in like, they're great and kids really like them, so why not use them?
it's fun, isn't it? I mean, I mean, every single one of us here on this show and probably listening used to go down the newsagent to pick up a weekly comic book of some kind, you know, or, or, I mean, maybe if you're a bit younger, you never had that chance, and that's why the Phoenix exists. Because there
You still got 2000 AD as well, haven't you? You know, I don't know, it's slightly older, but it's still, I mean, I was still picking up when I was
still going strong.
But a lot of the titles, like you had 2000, didn't you? You had, like you say, Roy the Rovers, Action. What were some of the girls' comics, Tony?
Misty and Bunty. You had stuff like Tornado.
Bunty,
and...
great. Four Marys. I used to read Four Marys. All my sisters used to get Bunty. Used to read Four Marys. I loved it. Great. And in fact, 2008 did bought all the rights to the old comics. They're bringing out them as books. So Misty, Roy the Rovers is coming back. I don't remember Marnie the Fox. They've got Marnie.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff coming out, isn't there? There's a sort of slow rollout. And speaking of Roy the Rovers, we might be hinting of a future guest will be talking to us about that as well, because that's about to get a resurgence, isn't it? Yeah. Roy the Rovers ran for 30 years, you know.
Yeah. I had my Roy the Rovers face.
Yeah.
Everyone does.
Yeah.
They've got all of the original comics. They've got them all in the archive on these amazing like bound volumes on the shelf in the office. That's what they bought, was literally like the actual physical, because that's how it existed. And they've got this this amazing walk-in, it's like all the obviously all like red bound, like it's a kind of library. And then they've got this ridiculous scanner and this guy who works there whose job is just to scan Roy of the Rovers and make it look good.
Yeah, because I mean, they're not scanning from the original artwork, are they, sadly? Because a lot of that artwork was lost. So they're actually scanning from the comics, which is a little bit the second, you know, the second option, I think. Because you can tell sometimes, can't you? But I know a lot of work's going into sort of cleaning up the pages and all that sort of thing. Yeah, you know, definitely.
Yeah, it's the quality of the original, isn't it? That, you know.
Yeah.
That is the main thing.
And then we heard from Pat around that, didn't we? I mean, people were just stealing them or using them to mop up stales, you know, spilt tea and stuff like that, you know.
But it's great that, like, you know, people are actually like giving a crap about these old books again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like trying to collect them, because I think good comics are fairly timeless, aren't they? That, you know, I don't think.
Plus, they've collected old Marvel and DC comics for years, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, and Warren and all this sort of thing. But we've just ignored. There's so many good comics out there. You know. Yeah. Tornado and Tiger and Star Lord and Eagle and all this sort of thing. There's so many good comics that existed with some amazing artists that just nobody knows about anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there's all this history, but there's certainly a period where the weekly comic book sort of area was fairly barren, wasn't it?
And completely.
And that's kind of where the DFC and the Phoenix has stepped into, isn't it?
Yes, the new, what's the new stand? Like, it's, you know, it's the supermarket. It's like that business with the, like you said, with the kind of cover mount toys and stuff like that, just changed the, you know, changed the landscape. Like, why put all the effort into the content if you can get a little pea shooter on the front, put rubbish inside, and then sell it for the same amount, like, and not pay anyone anything.
Yeah.
So it just just changed the landscape. And then, I don't know, weirdly over here, like, I think maybe it's a snobbery around children's. I mean, certainly when we did the DFC talking to teachers and stuff, there's a real still snobbery about comics.
Yeah.
Which has changed a lot. It's still a little hint of it, but it's definitely changed a lot now when I'm talking to teachers and stuff. But, like, you know, like in America and on the continent and in Asia and stuff, they didn't, you know, comics are just a much more sort of just accepted form of reading.
Yeah.
Just a different form of reading, whereas over here it's a little bit more like, a bit slow. I don't know. I think it's probably a bit of snobbery about what's proper.
Yeah.
I think it might also be because we've got, you know, we do have a really rich literary heritage in terms of prose
might be right.
and poetry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know,
and a lot
fiction.
Of the companies are set up to push that stuff as well,
yeah.
I think, aren't they? You know.
Yeah. And that's what we're competing. That's what all creators are competing to do. They want to be the next, like, literary. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we sort of missed out. It's just a huge gap of comics just not being made. Basically, you know, 2000 AD sort of kept going, but all those other ones just sort of lost their readership and jumped off. I mean, the Eagle had 1 million weekly readers a week.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
1 million. Imagine.
Yeah.
Weird. I don't imagine.
Only. I don't think it's one thing, though. I think everyone, you know, occasionally you get people say, oh, it's video games that ruined it. Yeah. But I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Mm. There's also, I mean, the literacy of kids perhaps isn't so good these days, and you got the internet and you've got video games and you've got TV at hand. When I was a kid, they only had 3 TV channels, you know, and there's a lot more going on, isn't there, for a kid to look at, to be obsessed with, you know, than picking up.
We compete with that. We compete with, you know, that's what our competition is like, all that stuff. But, you know, we've grown every single year. We grew by 50% last year.
Yeah.
Like, kids, I think there's too much in the world of people thinking you have to be one thing, like you're only going to play games, you're only going to read, you're only going to watch things. It's just not the way it is, I don't think. I think particularly when parents are trying to get your children to do other stuff, get them away from the screen, you know, give them a varied thing to do. So when the Phoenix comes, it's like that. It's like that one thing that they might do as well as all these other things.
Well, we
hope it is anyway.
I mean, what do you think you're doing right? Are you aiming for the right age group? I mean, you must have marketing meetings where you think, well, we're going for these this sort of age, or?
I have marketing meetings with myself. Oh yeah, I'm the marketing department. We do think about, we paid it like 6 to 12 is what we say. We think that it, to be honest, we don't really like saying 6 to 12. It's more just sort of give parents a guide, because it's just
to say, like, with any sort of, if you look at toys, if you look at board games, if you look, you know, anything that's marketed, if you think about it, towards the parents like to have that number that they can go,
they want
to
know
this is okay for my kid to read.
They want that
question all the time. They need it answered.
Yeah.
I mean, have you been running long enough where you're cycling through, so kids are coming into it and then leaving, and you're having to sort of boost again for new kids coming in? Because this is when you're aiming a fairly narrow age gap. It's not like Captain America, where it's, what, 35 to 55?
Yeah, we have a high churn, obviously, because we've got, like it's kids, so they grow up. But then there's lots of new kids. For the counter to that, there's lots of new kids. So we have to be really active marketing, because we have to replace the readers. But we don't have any lulls. It's like we've continually grown. But it has to be, you know, it has to be constant, because it does. The churn is obviously higher than it would be for like a.
From a content point of view, what do you go for then? Is it a particular thing you look for, Tom? Or?
I mean, it's basically what we like. A lot of it is, I'd like to say it was like a real carefully thought through formula, but actually it's more like we think we're probably analogous to most kids, and I like the same sort of stuff now as I did when I was 10. Which either means I'm incredibly sophisticated or incredibly childish now. Like, I don't know, take your pick. But and so if we like it and think it's cool, we sort of think, oh, then maybe the other readers will think it cool. And then it's things like, you know, when someone like Jamie Smart comes along and you're like, oh yeah, you completely understand what a 7 to 12 year old thinks is funny. in a way that no one else does. It's just obviously the right thing to be publishing. So it's more just like, what do we like? And we just got to have, because it's, I really don't want to get into that kind of like asking the readers. As soon as you ask someone to sort of like critique the thing they like, you start getting just totally different answers, totally different attitudes.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not natural. You don't, you know, like we all like things that if someone turned around to us and said, you know, critique it, we'd tear it to shreds, even though we like it. So, and that's, I don't know, maybe that's from David, some of my father, like he, you know, like really it's like creating the next best thing. You don't ask someone what it is, you come up with an idea and you do it, and it either is the next best thing or
yeah. And a lot of the comics that we loved, and they were doing their own thing anyway, you know, they weren't asking for permission, they weren't asking, like, you know, what do you love about this? And that's why we've got some of these legendary characters. We, you know, I mean, you take 2000 AD, you know, that's a pretty punk comic where they're just going hell for leather, doing what they felt like.
Just people being excited about what they're making.
And
that's a good point.
And I'm going to say something that may be controversial, but we're all readers, we all have opinions, but I think creators are not beholden to the reader. I think when people say, what do you want in my idea, then you shouldn't ask that question. You should do what you believe, and then because readers, a lot of the time, everyone's got so many different opinions, and they just nitpick left, right, and centre all the time.
Yeah.
If you've got a lot of readers, you're never going to find a consensus.
Yeah.
I'm also a great believer that. I'm also a great believer that the general public are just peasants.
Mate, if you want to work in customer services with like actual customers,
George Carlin quote. That's imagine how stupid the average person is, and then half of them are more stupid than that.
The thing is, though, what I think we expect people. It's quite interesting. My job's quite interesting in that I get to interface with lots of different types of things. So obviously, the creative stuff, like with working with the comics, is just wicked fun. But also the business side of it is really, really interesting, because you're dealing with, like, not at a high level, but like dealing with how people interact with things and the decisions they make and why they do certain things. And like, people are so judgmental about, you know, how people behave, but people's attention is just so spread among so many different things that when they see something, it's very rare that they actually read it closely and assimilate all the information in the way that you necessarily want them to. So we get, you know, like we've got really simple like marketing, like, you know, try 4 issues for a quid, all these kind of things. And we always get people just asking the most moronic, insane questions. And you've just got to not let it wind you up, because it really, really can.
Any examples?
Are they 4 consecutive issues? Something like that? Is that yes?
Four consecutive issues. Do I get them all at once? Or do I get them over 4 weeks?
Copies of one issue. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I've had 4 copies through the post, but I was expecting to get 4 of one issue. What do I do?
Let's just break it down. They're getting 4 issues of a comic for £1.
But the thing is, like, you think it's obvious, but it's obviously not obvious to everyone. And that's the thing, that things we think are obvious are not obvious to everyone. They're just not. So you've got to find a way to talk that catches the biggest number of people. There's always going to be some complete bananas on the outside who you're just never going to get a hold of. But you've got to try.
So what bits of content that have come into you and you published are you particularly proud of? Not getting you to choose your favourite baby, but which ones are you proud of the most?
I'm proud of. Well, I say proud is the wrong thing, because he really doesn't need any of my help. But I'm proud of Jamie Smart stuff, because I know the readers love it so much, and I love it and I really enjoy it. I'm proud to be associated with it. I don't know. Jamie doesn't need any help.
Yeah.
For me to make his comics good. You know, like, we work a bit more closely together on, so he's got a really great new series coming called Battlesuit B, which is a bit more narrative focused. So when it's a bit more of a longer form narrative, I can get a bit more involved and help a bit more in the construction of it. But in the kind of comedy sort of short hits, I mean, you know, Bunny Boy Monkey's got an overarching sort of narrative that Jamie pieces together, but he's just so in control of that, it doesn't need my help. So I'm proud of association with that. I'm really proud of Neil Cameron. okay. to have him in the comic. Like, I think Mega Robot Bros is a masterpiece. I think
that is a beautiful looking, like, and this goes pretty widespread for pretty much everything in the Phoenix. Actually, I look at the quality of the artwork and the storytelling whenever I look at an issue, and I just think, how long did this take them to do? Because this is, you know, especially
Robot... he's just pouring his heart and soul in.
Yeah,
like he's on fire basically. So he's so. You really got a handle on his story. He's got like a 5-year plan. Like, we know exactly what's going to happen. He's thought about it all. It's so current, so of the moment. It's about all the things that the world cares about at the moment, about like individuality and gender. And it's got superhero stuff in it. You know, it's got everything. And I think the readers love it. You know, we have a sort of publishing partnership with Scholastic in America for the books. And they're starting to wake up to Mega Robo. It got a, I don't know if it's boring publishing stuff, but there's a sort of review thing in America called Kirkus, which is like a book review site or paper, I can't remember anyway, but all the publishers, when books come out in America, what you want is a starred Kirkus review. That's like, it means like it's going to get a notice from everyone. And Mega River has got a starred Kirkus review, which is really prestigious and quite rare. So, and I think that story is just going to get better and better and better.
Yeah, I'm looking at a page of Alex where they're asking him what he's having for his lunch in the school playground. And are you having nuts and bolts? And he says, well, I'm having pasta bake. That just made me laugh.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's got a character in it called Stupid Philosophy Penguin. He quotes Sartre and other
But that's great. That's great for kids because you've got these crazy high concepts. But then, you know, the best sort of kids' comics as well is where kids can, you know, that's throwing Sartre into a kids' comic. You know, a lot of people wouldn't think about doing that.
Yeah.
I think kids can take so much more than people think they can. Like, you know, like you had Jess Bradley on, like Squidbits is amazing. She's like, there's so much great stuff in Squidbits. Like, you look at Squidbits and you think, oh, it's quite young. But if you read Squidbits, it's like, there's so much, like, there's so much great adult humour in there, and so many, you know, inspirations from Lovecraft to like fantasy role playing. You know, there's loads of stuff in there.
There was a great show on a couple of years ago. It might still be on CBeebies that I used to watch with my son, and it was called "What's the Big Idea?" And it was, I think it was like a French animation house, and they presented philosophical ideas very kind of cartoony and simplistically to kids, and it was really interesting. And you're right, the kids can take on board a lot more than I think many people give them credit for.
Yeah.
If you make it interesting, if you make it approachable, and give them something to hook, you know, to hook them, and a reason to invest, they'll invest. You know, like, I've got a 3-year-old, and she's so switched on. Like, when a kid is like 6, 7, 8, they're really, really quite aware of what's going on. They're not, you know, it's, some children have got sort of poor literacy, and we need to do much more in this country. Well, globally, to sort of help those children, but a kid with a sort of basic level of reading is really much more sophisticated than people give them credit for, emotionally as well. Like, and you see that with the sort of, we get letters, like amazing letters, and not just amazing pictures and things, but letters from kids saying, "Oh, you know, this really had a big impact on me." Like, we had an amazing one for Mega Robot Rose from a kid who's obviously going through sort of similar questions as Alex is, like questioning who he is and not really understanding why he's being forced into making certain decisions.
Okay.
And like just writing, saying like, "Oh, you know, like reading this has really sort of helped me." He's like 10.
Yeah.
Well, nice.
Kids are thinking about stuff like that. Kids do think about stuff like that, and like, so we want to, you know, we like silly stuff that doesn't have any depth to it, because that's great too. But I think there's a lot of, I think people, you know, don't give kids enough credit really.
Do you find that kids talk about the stories? I mean, are you getting any feedback where they're talked about at school and stuff? Because when I was a kid, that's what we did. We talked about what happened in the Avengers or the X-Men or Judge Dredd, you know. So
we do. I mean, for us, obviously, we're still tiny. I mean, we print like 13,000 comics a week, so we're really, it's amazing, it's great. You know, it's like a small town of children read the Phoenix every week.
It's great.
But it's not at the stage where in a playground everyone will be able to talk about it. But when kids come in, kids who know each other read it, talk about it, because we've seen that. But when kids come in, and so we have people in the office all the time, and basically whenever a parent finds out where we are, there's always like some industrious parents who find out where we are and call up, and we always say, "Yeah, come in, bring your kids in."
Oh, cool.
And when they come in, they're always like, oh, yeah, that was when Alex did this. And, oh, Tabs was over there doing that with Chops in issue, whatever. So they like they notice.
Right, that. Okay. Yeah.
Which is, like, brilliant, because that's when... Because, you know, with kids, you don't get... Doing what we do, we don't get that much feedback.
Yeah.
Like, mostly it's like you do it, you hope it's good, and you send it off into a black hole.
Yeah.
And there's the kind of feeling that parents are forcing their kids during the summer holidays to write a letter to the Phoenix, whatever comic it's going to be, you know. There's a little bit of that, isn't there? Shut up while I do something. Go and write a letter to the Phoenix.
Away.
So
it is a little bit... I mean, I go through these periodic kind of like... So Joe, who's the deputy editor, sits opposite me. I kind of occasionally look up and go, are we doing a good thing? Is there any point in carrying on? And he goes, I think we are.
Isn't it? He's just thinking he's having a tuna salad sandwich and you're asking him these big questions, Tom.
To be fair, though, getting feedback from the audience is kind of invaluable. And when people are writing and saying this is really good, really enjoying it, you're doing it right. So, but you like, we've all been there because we're all creatives. You put work out there and you just don't hear some stuff sometimand you're like, well, how's that been received? And sometimes you never know. But obviously, kids, if you're hearing about it, that's going great.
Kids are good, though, because like, you get kids coming to the office and you'll be like, oh, yeah, so... And obviously, we always ask about the stuff we write and things like, you know, do you like this? And they have to go, not really.
And you're like... What did you just turn from out the office or slap them or something?
Yeah, punch them in the face. Give them a badge and punch them in the face.
Now you'll like it.
Yeah. That's one thing, though, isn't it, with kids? Like, they have chefs try their food out on their kids, so when the kid says, oh, that's horrible, you know, they're not couching it in
feeling. They don't have any shame. They don't think, they're just like, they want to be honest. They're just like, I didn't think that was so good, actually. I don't think you should do that again.
So you start off like that when you're young, and when you're old, you like that again, Tom. That's what I find. Yeah. I mean, do you have a plan once... Do you have any sort of forward thinking where the kids are going to finish... reading the Phoenix will move them onto this or that? Do you have a little bit of a plan around that as well? Or
definitely. Before and after. I think other titles is like really in the pipeline now. I think we're really starting to think about what other titles to do and what the right next one to do. It's like we love the idea of doing a younger one that is, you know, maybe 3-4, but you know, very short age range, but
it's
got some funny stuff in that just gets kids in that habit that leads into the Phoenix. And then we'd love to talked about this a lot, we're trying to think about the right way to do it, but we'd love to do like a YA thing, like something that could work for teenagers and stuff. There's a cultural thing in the UK, I think, where like the mass public will have to be done in a particular way because it doesn't, you know, like in Japan, like it's just like part of the culture. But I think the key to it is, you know, great creators, like some great stories, and then to think heavily about the publishing. Like with the kids, with the age group we do, like the paper is brilliant. And actually, we used to, so we do have the Phoenix is available digitally on Comixology in America and Canada only.
Okay.
As a bit of an experiment.
Right.
But we're quite militantly, apart from that, like paper only.
Right.
Okay.
And I think becoming more so because. People are always like, the publisher's always like, oh, you know, we want to find a way to like make our content more interesting. And maybe we should have a web platform and stuff like that. But actually, as soon as you do that, I think you just go into this bear pit of like Minecraft and Fortnite and like these huge cultural things that these companies have spent literally hundreds of millions of pounds making popular. And we're not going to be able to spend hundreds of millions of pounds. So we're not going to be able to compete with it. And when a kid picks up an iPad, is he going to read The Phoenix or is he going to play Fortnite? Because I know what I'd do. So
okay, that's interesting.
How are the numbers
for you in the States and Canada though around that, if you don't mind me asking?
They're not big. I don't think kids are reading digital comics at the moment. You never know these things, and there's no doubt that the publishing transition to digital has not worked out the way all the doom mongers are predicting. You know, like children's publishing's booming at the moment. The whole publishing industry in the UK was up 9% last year. Like books are doing great.
And, you don't take an iPad to read to your kid in bed. You know what I mean?
No, you have a book. Don't. It's just not. It's just people want, again, it's like that view of like people only want one thing. Oh, like books were like this and now they're going to be like this. But that's just not what it is. I've got an iPad, I've got a Kindle and I've got books. And sometimes I might read something on the Kindle. Sometimes I prefer to read on it. But like you want the flexibility, and actually having the flexibility is great. But we don't want to compete with that flexibility. We want to actually put something in an envelope, persuade a parent to give it a go, send it directly to a kid so it's theirs from that point onwards. Mm. And it comes through the letterbox. It's not competing with anything.
Do you comic shop distribute or anything like that in the States? Have you got to deal with any of the big supermarkets or anything like that? Is that something you consider? Right.
Yeah, we're thinking about it. But the next thing for us in the States is to start the paper weekly on subscription.
Yeah.
Right. That's the next thing.
Would that be setting up an office or someone in the States
to handle
it? Yeah. A partner, but I don't think we'd need an office, to be honest, because I think what we'll do is all we need is a printer. And that's it, because most printers fulfill the stuff they print. So most printers, they'll print it and they'll send it out for you. So really what we need is just somewhere to print it and then send it out to people and then do the kind of marketing and stuff. So but you could find a partner. There's lots of different ways to do it. But we like the idea of making the comic in Oxford and then sending it out everywhere in the world. It doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah.
You know, maybe have a local person.
Yeah. One of the things I like about the postal sort of service you do is when you sign up for it, you can sign up as a parent, but you can put the kid's name into the envelope. Is that what it is? So when it gets delivered, it goes direct to the kid's getting the mail. The comic is actually it's almost personalised in a little way, isn't it? That the kid knows that this package is their mail, which is their Phoenix comic.
Yeah, well, that's an example of when we need to make that more obvious, because actually quite a lot of parents miss the fact that they can put their kid's name in it.
Yeah.
They could then like weeks later.
That's a lovely little touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they love it. If you've got kids or you've seen kids get posts, kids fucking love getting posts.
Yeah.
That'll change soon, Tom.
Yeah. You never get it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something you don't ever get. It's kind of exciting, so it becomes a kind of routine.
And the envelope, like when the envelope's like got some designs on it. It's like a colourful envelope as well, isn't it? I think. Is it?
Yeah, I think we can do more with it, so I'll make it more fun. The best thing now is, because everyone's going mental about plastic. We've always had a paper envelope. Everyone's going mental about plastic and switching to a paper envelope. And we've got people who've just joined the Phoenix writing, just going, "Oh, so good! You turned to a paper envelope." And we're like, "We've always had a paper envelope." Didn't know it was cheaper to do it plastic before, we're stupid. But no, we wanted to print on it. That's the thing. We wanted to print something fun, like really fun on it. Mm, so much you can do with stuff.
So how do you take submissions, or how do you find people, Tom? Do you go out looking for them, or?
Yeah, we don't go out enough. And actually, I think this year we're going to do a bit more proactive looking.
Yeah,
we do accept submissions. I mean, the reality is that we've got a limited number of pages, and we've got a stable of people that we love and we work with. But we do commission new stuff. So a new strip we started this year was called Gorbra.
Oh yeah, James State. Yeah, that
he's
was
great. Man. Like, I think he's super good.
We're big fans of his comic Big Jimmy on this show.
Cool. Oh yeah.
He's really, really good, I think, and his art is great. He's
and that's
super,
like a strange, like it's like Conan the Barbarian meets. What is the setup of that story?
He's like a barbarian chef who travels through time and space to cook strange meals.
We've all done a comic like that.
I think he's a friend of Jess Bradley's. I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She told him about us, but he sent it in. So we look at everything we're setting.
Yep.
You know, we're a pretty small office, and we're, to be honest, probably owe an apology to anyone who's listening now who's sent to me and hasn't had a reply for us. We do look at everything, but it's just so manic and mental. We just don't really get a chance to get back to everyone. But we're trying to get better at that. But that was just an offer. Something came in and we read it. I read it and I was like, I really like this. And it's as simple as that, really, if we really like it.
But how did he sort of set that up? Did he set it up like a Phoenix sort of strip, sent you like four pages as they would be in the comic?
No. He had an idea, and he had like one that was 2 pages, one that was like 5 pages, one was 3 pages, and like a couple of pictures. The first thing we said was it can't be 5 pages, you're going to be able to fit it in, so you're going to have to do in four pages what you're doing in five.
Right.
And there was just one. There was one episode which we've published now called "The Haunted Sandwich," and it just I just thought the way it played out was just so good, basically. And it was so it wasn't like he sort of did it in various different shapes, but it was more like, oh yeah, that art. And also, it's a timing thing. you know, like, so, you know, so Zach's been on there. So Zach now works at the Phoenix, and we're developing a, like a fantasy thing that we're doing, we're kind of doing internally. And like, yeah, so we're developing a fantasy thing. So people send in loads of fantasy things. We probably don't have space for it right now. It doesn't mean we don't love them and they're not amazing. We wouldn't publish them at some point in the future, but we do try and, we fail, I think, quite a lot, but we do try and have like a sense of like the different types of things, so a little range of things like that. So so a timing is part of it. We do look at absolutely everything that comes in, everything registers in our brains, and even if we don't get back to people straight away, if we've seen something we really like, it will sit there, and we'll get back in touch with them if something comes up.
Okay, cool.
So there's so many different sort of strips, you know, like you've got like Gorbara, which is like a fantasy cooking strip. I can't believe I'm saying that. But, you know, you've got cartoony animals, you've got robots. There's a bit of everything for kids, isn't there? I mean, the one that has always intrigued me, and I haven't read any of it yet, but I know it's quite popular, is Corpse Talk.
Yeah, yep. Right.
That's one of your bigger sort of titles in that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the other one I'd like super proud of as well. Like, so Adam, I think Adam's brilliant. And what we've done is, that's been for a real evolution of development. So he used to do that over two pages. He does quite a strict grid system the way he does his comics.
Because the setup of that is it someone interviewing a famous dead
person?
It's him,
yeah, yeah. So he's drawn himself, he's like a Jonathan Ross chat show host who interviews famous courts from history to get their sort of down and dirty from about their life. And we've just actually done a huge amount of work, sort of tweaking the old ones we've got so we can publish them in a slightly different format. So now we've just launched them as a new series starting last September, publishing them thematically.
Right.
The first one was Corpse Talk, Groundbreaking Scientists. The one that came out last month was Groundbreaking Women. There's Rotten Queens and Kings coming in September this year. And then Rebels, and then Atlas. So we kind of bunch them together for thematic things, because for the bookshops and for foreign publishers, that just sort of makes it work a bit better.
Yeah.
And I think those books they're great. Really, really pleased with them.
It's like a double-edged sword as well, isn't it? Because, you know, obviously there's comedy that can be mined there. It's funny, but it's quite informative and historical, and like, so that is easier to tap into schools, I would imagine, to sort of say, here is some fun history books for kids to check out.
So that horrible history thing, you know, horrible history is just still massive.
And actually
David started Horrible Histories when he was at Scholastic. It's one of the big series that he was involved in the formation of. So he's got lots of experience kind of with non-fiction series and things like that. So yeah, it's become, kids love Corpse Talk, and people always look at it and go, oh, it's too wordy, and oh, kids aren't going to read that, but like, they do.
Yeah. Right.
And I think it's Adam as well. Adam's got a really great sense of humour and walks that line of historical reality and humour. And you know, we've done some pretty risque people that, you know, on the face of it aren't that suitable for our age group. But
were there any that he came to you and sort of said, I'm going to do one about this person, and you thought, really?
No, we've done them and we've had complaints about them.
Oh,
yeah, but I think mostly we've done them quite well. So what we got complaints about the Frida Kahlo one we did, because what we do is the mum test, which is like basically asking my mum.
Yeah, I'll do that too.
Yeah, because most of the time we're like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, blood everywhere. Let's do it. His head's coming off. Great. And then it's kind of like, hang on a minute. Maybe we should just mum test this one. Just check that we're not mental. And sometimes she goes, yeah, you shouldn't do that. anyway, we step over the line sometimes. But anyway, so like the Frida Kahlo, we got some complaints about. But we've done like, you know, Rumi, who wrote poems about love and sex and stuff like that. And you know, that's quite touchy for some parents, but he did it in just a sensitive, he just did it in a clever way. So,
well, in regards to Adam Murphy, quickly going back to him, dude, I reviewed one of his books, I think, for one of our first episodes, called Fever Dreams. Oh, yeah. Remember, guys? Yeah,
yeah,
that's pretty lively. I've got to tell you, there's obviously like him getting, I've been held back. Right, I'm going to go nuts. I think I'm going to go back to the Phoenix, isn't it? It's a great adult comic, you know.
Yeah, we wouldn't get
really,
that.
Really worth reading.
We would, yeah. I mean, we wouldn't pub, we wouldn't publish.
No, God no. I completely understand why, but yeah.
He's not someone. Yeah, that's the thing though. He's not someone who, you know, when we do the early drafts of Corpus Talk, a lot of it's probably the wrong side of the line because it's best to start there and see where you end up and then tug it back where you need to. But he's been doing it for like 6 years now. So he nails it most of the time.
I find it difficult, that thing, when people say, well, kids will like this, kids will go for this, or kids won't. How do you kind of get your head in that kind of space? Do you know what I mean? I mean, Tony, you've done it well where you did Bike Force for the charity. Yeah, for the Little Heroes. But do you ever feel like, oh, I'm writing a story here for kids, but you don't want to kind of dumb it down, but it's such a fine line.
Yeah, I think with that, I was just looking for a hook and something interesting. And you just sort of turn to a different side of your brain, I suppose, do you? I just wanted something. You've got to put yourself in the position of the reader, haven't you, and what they would find interesting. And I was kind of thinking, well, they're kids. They love going fast on their bikes. You know, what if they entered another dimension when they went really fast? And that's kind of where I went with that one. But, you know, most of my stuff.
Exactly the way to think. Exactly.
Right, okay, cool. Is that something you have to tell some of your creators, Tom, or do you have to sit down with them? Or
no, I think, you know, that came to you naturally. It comes to kind of good creators with good ideas naturally, I think. I think selfless creation, actually, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld says this as well, like even when he's being at his most disturbing, it's like, if you're doing it for them, then you'll be okay. But if you start doing it for yourself, then that can start to be kind of problematic. And I think it's really, put yourself in the mind. It's all about the reader. For us, it's all about the reader. Like everything we do in the Phoenix is, we like it, but we're trying to think, will the readers really think this is cool? If they don't think it's cool, why are we doing it? And so that kind of experiential, and with kids, I think that's exactly the right approach. It's like drilling down to those specific, you know, like fantasies or experiences that we know they really like. You know, and that's why kids like superheroes, because, well, we all like superheroes for the same reason. But, you know, when you're a kid, that sense of like wishing you could be invisible, wishing you could fly, is like that much more powerful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's okay. Wishing you had claws come out of your hands.
Yeah.
I wish that at work quite a lot. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Do you have any like little mottos in the office, or people come in and, you know, do you have like any, as a sort of in charge person, do you have like a catchphrase where they, you know, no boobs or something like that? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Sort of.
I don't have a catchphrase, and I feel like a real loser.
Oh no! We'll think of one for you by the end of the show.
I normally I don't really have a good catchphrase. I'm quite excitable.
That's a good thing, like, with this sort of thing. You've got to be excited about it, you know.
I feel like I'm hairing off and stuff. So
If I ever became an editor, I'd sort of style myself a bit after Jonah J. Jameson.
Yeah,
like, have a big cigar. Wait. Sort of brush your hair up.
Sort of slightly Hitler-esque mustache.
Yeah, gross.
Yeah.
Start bellowing down the office, Parker.
Yeah. And then build a robot to fight Spider-Man. Yeah, that's good.
Your face on his chest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that wouldn't. You're probably the other side of the loony bin.
I really want to make you editor or something, Nada. So. You actually like have offices for the Phoenix, even though, you know, we're not talking like huge. You haven't got a skyscraper or anything yet. But
it's a cool office. Nice.
Yeah, but in this office, do you have like artists actually sort of working in there as well? And, you know, what is the setup of the Phoenix?
So there's basically two rooms. So it's not like a great office in terms of its setup, but it's great in terms of its location. So it's right in the middle of Oxford. So it's in like a really beautiful building in a street in the middle of Oxford, so like fantastic, lucky, nice. Wonderful, and it's kind of it's kind of quite cramped to be honest now, but it's fine. So it's basically me and Joe, who's the deputy editor, and then at the moment in that room we've got my brother, who's a writer, who's working on something absolutely fantastic. We're doing this non-fiction comic with the Wellcome Trust on DNA. Basically, we're going to do comics like get kids into science with comics. We're going to do this like serialized DNA story, like a non-fiction series. No, anyway, so he's writing that, and Dan Boltwood, who's a great artist.
Love Dan Boltwood.
Yeah, he's work. Great. Mm. Anyway, but he's also writing this wicked choose your own adventure thing that we're doing. Because we're all like massive Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone fans, and like, they read all those books that we're doing. So we're doing something. Anyway, so he's doing that. And then there are two artists. There's Zach, who obviously you've met, whose work, the stuff he's doing at the moment on this strip we're working on called Legacy, is absolutely disgusting how good it is.
He's leveling up constantly, isn't he?
Mate, when you see this, he's leveled up like 20 million levels in like a jump.
Because what's the strips he's done for the Phoenix before? Because we love his book Monstrosity.
Monstrosity. Yeah. So he did. What's the first thing he did? The first thing I did. Well, so we did Simon Swift together, which was like a fantasy thing, but like was like made it a bit of a rush, and then we never really got to finish it. But has always actually been like one of the most asked for strips we've published, and people always ask for it to come back. So that's why we wanted to do fancy things for like, because actually the thing about most people when they send in submissions is they're always trying to be original. Everyone's always trying to be really original, but actually like you don't have to be like original in every sense. Like, obviously you want like an original story that feels wonderful and exciting with great characters, but I love fantasy. I love it. I'm a massive fantasy fan. That's why I read when I was a kid, and I want a fantasy story, but no one does a straight fantasy story. So we're like, right, what we're making is basically every fantasy book and every Final Fantasy game you've played rolled into one. Because that's what we like. So anyway, so we're kind of doing that. So he did that. But he did Sky Drifters, and then he's done like loads of other sort of bits and bobs and stuff like that. But we wanted to like expand the team a little bit and bring a bit more sort of artistic skill into the office. And then next to him there's a French artist called Alice Leclerc, who's with us at the moment, who's doing lots of flatting and things. And then there's Paul Duffield, who I must remember has got a wicked Kickstarter, which everyone should go and kickstart now, for the File Art Isle. And he is he works remotely, but is kind of half designer and half like doing illustration and things.
Was
like that.
He with you from did he start with the DFC as well?
No, he did some work for the. I think actually, I don't know if it was published. I think it was shut before, but he definitely had some work like commissioned for the DFC. And then his partner is Kate Brown, who's a redonkulous artist, and she's done lots of stuff for us. Well, again, with Neil Cameron, Tams in the Deep, she draws that, which is beautiful. And then Paul did some stuff, and then it kind of got involved in sort of the Phoenix as sort of designer illustrator for about 5 years now. And then it's sort of Andrew, who's like the operations manager, which is basically everything else.
Right. Okay.
Because actually, like the back end of the Phoenix just takes just so much time. Just sort of subscriptions. Just so much stuff can go wrong with the dresses and stuff. We work with a third party company to do it, but just like we've got thousands of customers, so just in any one week, in any one week, we've got like just hundreds of missing issues just because that's what Royal Mail's percentage hit rate is. It's like 98% delivery rate. So thousands of people, you're going to have loads of issues that aren't arriving. So there's quite a lot, I think, that goes on behind the scenes of the Phoenix, which it's a lot of really hard work that isn't that glamorous, and people don't really get to see much of it.
What about in terms of like the actual sort of layout, putting the issue together in design or whatever? Who like actually stitches the whole thing together when you've got all the artwork and stuff?
So what we do now is Joe basically puts the issue together. We're kind of talking all the time, so we're kind of talking about what we want to do all the time. And we go through kind of phases. At the moment we're in a phase of like get the issues done because Joe had a him and his wife had a baby just before Christmas, and we had our second child just after Christmas, so the first 3 months of this year has been like brutal.
Folks, that this episode's coming out now is because these two guys had babies at the beginning of the year.
So it's a bit selfish,
but who am I to say?
And when I say we have babies, we didn't do anything at all.
Yeah,
it's true.
yeah So he'll put the issue together, and then basically I'll start reading it, and then Paul will start getting involved. But along that way, we'll have talked about what we want the cover to be and any special stuff in it, and if we want to have a bit of fun with that particular issue. And then Paul will start like tidying things up and making stuff like look good and nice. And now Alice, she has certain pages that she'll put together, and then about 2 weeks out from publication I'll start reading it quite regularly, and then Joe and I will start kind of talking about it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we never have enough time to put it together. Like, we always feel like we haven't put enough time into the issue, because you just gotta, like, this is the thing where it's not a catchphrase, this is what we always say in the office, the sort of facepalm is like, success for us is never ever ever stopping.
Right, okay.
So it's like, you know, victory is like one a week forever. Which is obviously fantastic, but anyway,
is it a bit like a serial killer's pin board in your office with like all these sort of things going off into the distance where you know, well, that's going to start in an issue in August, that's going to start in the issue in December? Is it such a long eye as that, or is it more day to day?
No, it's like all through next year almost as well. Like, we know.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
We know. If we don't know exactly what it is, we know roughly what it is, and some things we know exactly. Yeah.
And you've got to be on top of that, haven't you, Tom? Because you've got to be chasing people for deadlines, because you know that certain art's got to be done, even if they've done this week's. You know that you need the one in 6 weeks' time soon, don't you? You know, it's
It's a pretty relentless pace. Like, that's the thing. It really isn't for everyone. So being published in the Phoenix, I don't think is for everyone, even if someone thought they wanted it. Like, because if we like it and the readers like it, we want loads of it. Every week. So like, we've just put a plan in place to get Mega Robo Bros in the comic almost every single week.
Yeah.
And that has required, you know, like tweaking stuff, getting some help with flats, like, you know, lots of different things. But that's mostly about us just being organized and being just really ahead of the game. And actually, like, we had something that unfortunately had to pull out at almost the last minute, but because we're quite well organized now, we can cover it.
But
if something else pulls out, we'll be completely fucked.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But I think that's an interesting bit of information for, you know, there's probably people out there go, oh, I might submit something to the Phoenix in the future, you know, just. That's all well and good, but just be prepared. If you're going to submit something, you have to submit it with the full intention to put your foot down and go for it. And
do that when it gets picked up, maybe in 6 months.
Yeah.
You know? We
want to publish, like, not just franchises, but things that have got a chance to be like a kid's favourite thing in their childhood.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know, we do try and have some space for like little one-off interesting things. So we will always look at that kind of stuff. But, you know, 80% or 85% of the stuff we want to publish is like your Mega Robos, your Bunny versus Monkey, your Gorbra, something that can like really build into a property, something that we can, you know, publish books for, something that we can think about merchandise for, something that we can really get behind.
Yeah.
You know, we want fans. We want to make fans, and fans want loads of the stuff they're fans of.
Yeah.
That's the plan anyway.
No, I get you. Yeah. So you're also in the market of producing collections of it as well, are you, Tom? Or?
Yeah. So we've got the Phoenix Presents series. So we've got 27 books in the series.
Yeah.
And we've sold, I think, over 150,000 copies in the UK of that series.
Wow. Nice.
And which obviously per book is not like amazing sales in book terms, but we're really, really pleased with it. And, you know, that's comic books for kids again is something else people say, oh, you know, people don't want it. But, you know, normal returns on a normal fiction title in publishing is like 15-20%. Well, Phoenix books is like 4%.
Oh, amazing.
So that's getting out there all the time. People are getting excited about that. We just went to Bologna, and lots of international and American publishers really excited about Corpse Talk.
Oh, cool.
And other things like that. So Jamie Smart's Lushkin's coming out in May, which is a really great book.
And we're just sort of evolving that series. That's such a funny character as well. Lushkin's because it's become a sort of kids comic in the truest sense, and properly fun. It's almost like, you could say it's like Bottom for kids, you know, the sitcom Bottom.
Right, okay.
But I remember when Lushkin, the character, was in Jamie Smart series Bear. And he was a completely different character.
Yeah. He still has that tinge.
Yeah, he still has that dark edge, doesn't he, Lushkin? But yeah, Bear wasn't a kids' comic, and it's one of my favourite comics of all time. And Lushkin's such a, you know, that must be a popular character with kids.
Love it. I mean, the thing is, Jamie just knows what, he knows what lots of people enjoy, but like kids aged 6 to 12 and a bit older, like he just knows what they're going to find funny.
He seems to put things in comics that I can imagine kids running around a playground just screaming from the top of their lungs.
Yeah. It ain't a tea party till a piggy done a farty.
But the great
thing about Jamie is that he's not afraid to have like really emotional, quiet moments in his mad comics, and the kids love that too. Like, it's not all
right.
He's really very judicious with his bum jokes. He knows when, because bum jokes could be like the best, but if you overuse them, they're the worst.
Yeah.
He like has got a great bum jokeometer that is telling him.
Are they available to buy?
Bum jokes.
Bum jokeometer.
Yeah.
I'm sure Jamie's got a few.
We do need one of those.
Yeah, it would be constantly going off.
So, do you do like workshops in bookshops and stuff like that? I know Flying Eye have just done a little sort of Waterstones tour and stuff like that. Is that something you aim for as well?
Yeah, we used to do a lot more of it. And obviously, lots of creators that we work with do lots of workshops. Like Neil Cameron does loads of great workshops. Adam Murphy used to do them, but he's actually emigrated to Canada with his wife, so he doesn't do them so much.
Right, okay. Any excuse.
Yeah, and lots of other people do them, but to be honest, we don't do them. We used to do lots of events, but to be honest, it's a lot of work, and we're just kind of head down, like trying to get the Phoenix to be. You know, we want it to get to a certain size, and we sort of just had to distill down to be like, right, what are the three things at work? Right, we're only going to do those three things till we get to where we want to be.
And I suppose you don't have the staff to do like every MCM and stuff like that. Although I know you probably get good sales, but it's balancing against who you've got available.
We get there. We try and go to Thought Bubble every year. Because it's just that's where all the contributors go. That's where all our creators go. So it's nice to go out there and buy them a drink and meet.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say that's just code for getting on the booze, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
right. Yeah. What's the Thought Bubble experience like for a comic like the Phoenix?
It's quite quiet actually. You get some mega fans who come up, but to be honest, I don't think we've ever really done it properly. I think this year we're going to just come. We're not going to have a table. We're just going to come and hang out. And next year, I think we're going to go mental. I think we're going to have a massive table with huge banners and loads of awesome free stuff to give away and make it and have a party and make a huge song and dance. Because I think we've always done it a bit, not half-heartedly, but like when you're a company, there's a certain expectation. And if you don't meet that, then you don't really look like you're trying. So
yeah, I get you.
We want to go. But I think next time we go and have like a table sit down, I think we want to like really be really celebratory and welcome people. And
you want to line up some of the contributors to do little signings and drawings and stuff like that.
Make them, you know, superstar them a bit and advertise it in the comic and get the readers up there and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Definitely.
I just don't think we'll be able to do that this year. Yeah. I think next year will be when we do that.
Yeah, I think people forget. People see, this company, that company. They think there's a staff of 3,000 people, don't they? You know, but the truth is, there's not that many people at a company to do everything, is there? There's sometimes little added extras, aren't they? You know?
Yeah, the worst thing is, big companies, people just go, oh, yeah, it's fine, because it's a big company and it doesn't matter. Small companies, you give the hardest time ever. You know, when Amazon bug wrap your passage. Sorry.
Yeah, easy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry. But, you know, mess up your package delivery. It's annoying and all the rest of it, but you don't like go and try and get Amazon. But when the small company who failed to deliver your wooden cuckoo clock don't send it to you on time, which has got a chip in it, you get on the phone and go, like, this is outrageous. I can't believe this. Yeah. So I think, like, when you're smaller, and the worst thing is, like, you are expected to be able to fulfill everything to the same degree as a company with huge resources. And that's reasonable to one extent. Like, yeah, if you're going to sell something to people, you should be able to deliver it in the manner that they're accustomed to, because that's the expectation. But it is quite, you know, to have it like our web shop, you can buy stuff from our web shop, that our back end fulfillment is just not like Amazon. So when you order it, it's not going to arrive the next day. It should do. And as a customer, I'm kind of like, it's really annoying that it doesn't. But the reality is that we don't have a cool, amazing robotic warehouse that with things zipping around all over the place and loads of like 0 hours contract workers.
So you just in the back on cocaine and strippers. That's how it works.
So that's kind of frustrating because you obviously want to deliver the absolute best thing you can. So what we, you know, when we mess up at the Phoenix, we like, I always see like a big mess up is an opportunity to like make someone love you really the most. So we go beyond the, you know, above and beyond to like make things right and give people freebies and stuff, all the rest of it.
I'd like to think the Brits don't complain too much.
They do.
I know they do. Like, you know, but in the States, it's kind of like this fucking going at it, complaining at the drop of a hat. But the thing is,
we get because they love it because their kids love it. When your kids love something, people go to war for their kids. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
okay.
Once you've disappointed Mary because her comment didn't turn up on a Friday for the second week in a row.
Yeah.
Mum or dad gets on the phone. And it's like, you're ruining her weekend. What's going on? Get me.
I
need this comic now. She can't read a sheet 322 because we haven't got 321.
To be fair, that's how I am actually.
Yeah. I'm sorry if there are any Phoenix readers out there called Mary who are missing.
I hate Mary.
Yeah.
So bellowing vitriolic abuse at the phone while the young girl's sitting there listening to it.
Yeah.
But you know, that's good. That means they like it, and we've got that's where we step up and go like, right, we are going to get her a comic, and probably three free books and a binder as well.
I must complain to you, I think, soon.
Yeah.
What's next for the Phoenix, Tom? What have you got? What's on the horizon or coming soon, or what can we expect?
In terms of content?
Yeah, or anything, mate. Yeah, any little things you've got planned or...
Okay, so content-wise, we've got this strip that Zach and I are doing together called Legacy, which I'm really excited about, is coming. Loads of Mega Robo Bros. So we're trying to turn Mega Robo Bros into kind of like, you know, weekly... every week in the Phoenix flagship strip, so that's
cool.
Plenty of that. Well, I think we won't quite hit one every week this year, but almost, and next year we definitely will. So that's really good. We've got a new Jamie Smart series, which is going to be fantastic, and we've got our DNA non-fiction series, which is going to be really good, and some more sort of in-house stuff like the Choose Your Own Adventure thing and a few other bits and bobs. So that's kind of content. And apart from that, it's just like we're just pushing for subscribers. We're just like, you know, 95% of our readers are subscribers.
Okay.
And we just want to get to, you know, we want to get to that point where we're really seriously thinking about publishing in America, and, you know, starting to have the resources to really promote all this amazing artwork that we've developed over the last sort of 5 or 6 years. You know, we've got thousands of pages of comic which people haven't read because we've
non-subscribers, where do they pick up a copy? Where are you distributing to?
So you can on our website, we've got a store, so about 150 Waitroses and about 150 W. Smith stop the Phoenix.
Right. Okay.
But the best way and the easiest way is to get our 4 issues for a quid offer. And you know, it's cancel any time. You're not tied in if you don't want to be, and you'll get over 4 weeks, you'll get to try the Phoenix.
Okay.
I've done that this week. Signed up this week.
Have you? Look at you. You love a bargain, don't you?
You know me. No, it's, it's brilliant, though. I mean, like, you know, weekly comics, I think, sometimes, you know, especially with weekly comics, the price can be something that may put some people off to get, you know, every issue of that month. Do you know what I mean? But 4 issues for £1, and if you subscribe, you're saving a bit of money that way as well, aren't you? So it's...
Yeah, I mean, I think we feel pretty good about the price. Yeah. It's basically $9.99 a month. And if you think about the other stuff you get for $9.99, like how much coffee is, or a Pret sandwich, or like some chips or something like that, and you get...
They're bloody good chips if they're
$9.99. Yeah. Well, yeah, have you been to Five Guys? It's a tenner, but for £10, you get every week, you get a copy of the
through
Phoenix
the post.
And you get,
through the post,
and you get all that stuff. So I think compared to, you know, compared to lots of other stuff that you might you might spend your money on. Obviously, though, one of our real goals is to make it cheaper, make it as cheap as possible.
And
that's a function of size, like any company, like just the economies of scale, like whether it's what Royal Mail charge you or your print costs, like just the bigger you are, the cheaper it is to make it, to make everything. So,
yeah, because it's not a thin comic either. You're getting a lot of bang for your buck, I think, with the Phoenix every week, I think.
Yeah, we try and back out. We do get some people saying they think it's too much.
right. But, no one's ever happy, are they?
No.
Mary.
Mary. I fucking hate Mary.
we want it to be good value, though. You know?
Yeah.
You want someone to feel like it's kind of good value.
Yeah. Cool. So, and we know there's a lot of our listeners out there who have kids, or maybe they just want to read it themselves. So, it's the phoenixcomic.co.uk, isn't it? That's where they can subscribe.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and if you have kids, don't forget to put their name on the envelope, you know, because there's a little section that says, you know, because the account is in the parents' sort of name, isn't it? But then there's a postal sort of bit for the kids that you can fill out.
Yeah, so just put their name in it and it'll go straight to them and it'll feel like a little present, like getting a gift every week.
Oh,
yeah, there you go. Nice.
It's almost like that's a marketing line that someone's got.
It's like a catchphrase. We've done it.
Yeah. Yeah. At the very least, it'll shut your kid up for a good couple of hours.
Yeah, it's cheap babysitting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, best way. That's the best way to describe comics, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I hate kids. They're annoying. Give them a comic, shut them up. There you go. There's a little catchphrase.
There you go. You're always after the pull quote, aren't you, Tony? but I will say one of the best things, because the website is quite nice as well, but it's got a lovely sort of testimonial on it, which says, "My mum asked me if I'd rather play video games or read The Phoenix. I said The Phoenix because it's amazing." And that's from a Phoenix
a real
reader.
Quote as well.
Young Vincent Hunt.
That's the other thing. Like, we use quotes and all basically on all our advertising. We got one quote just before Christmas from a kid saying, I think her mum saying that her kid has said it's better than Xbox, which is obviously like a ridiculously great quote to get. But it's so good that when you use it, everyone goes, "No one said that." And it's like, no. Honestly, someone said it, and they go, "I don't care. I don't believe it. Oh, so it's so good we can't use it. That's really good. Thanks."
Peasants. Back to what I said at the start. Public are peasants.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
So the Phoenix is flying the flag and staying positive in the face of adversity.
It's a long-running joke. If I get any good feedback for Vanguard, it's always from Mr. B. Dutcher. And that's like the joke.
Nice. But yeah, definitely check out the Phoenix. I mean, there's going to be more of their contributors who are going to take part in this lovely show, no doubt, in the future. Some of which being the Etherington brothers.
Yeah.
Which
legends.
The legends and
the millionaires,
millionaires, the palatial Etherington grounds.
All it's taken for that Kickstarter is 15 years of bone breaking drawing for 25 hours every single day.
Straight
out of the blue, it's just like success.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it's the most successful comic that's ever been on Kickstarter.
Lorenzo knows. Yeah, he's like sort of a comic. Lorenzo he's amazing. He's such a brilliant bloke. You see what his target was? It was £1,000.
Yeah.
So he could say it was 243,000% funded. They think about stuff like that, and it's sensible because it's like, it's good to be able to say something like that. It's good to be able to say it's the most funded comic Kickstarter.
I mean, going into that Kickstarter, if I had a product like that, I think I know that it's going to get funded, even if I'm looking for a fairly small goal. You know, you've got to have the confidence in it. And that book, there's many people out there who've... I mean, I pledged to the Kickstarter. You did as well, didn't you, Dan?
I think. I forgot.
You fool. You absolute fool.
There's so many things I said, I'll pledge on that, I'll do that.
I know,
this.
Yeah. Kickstarter's a dangerous place at the moment because they're
everywhere. He'll do it again. There'll be another opportunity. Yeah. But you know, they for a year, you know, we've been publishing those pages in the Phoenix as part of the marketing of it, which has helped. You know, I don't think it's really helped the Kickstarter because I think it's a different audience, but it's, you know, given him a little bit of cash to tide him over.
Yeah.
But the rest of it has been, he's been giving it away every week. he's given away yeah. everything he's just raised the money for, because he realised that what he was doing was going to inspire people, and that actually his, because he's a ridiculous artist and an amazing designer. He's a Lorenzo Edmonds is a genius. Like, yeah. He's a proper genius. And so, like, to for him to craft it together into a book is going to be beautiful. Even if you've got all the content, to have the book he's made is going to be fantastic.
Oh, God, yeah. I can't wait to get it. I think it's going to be like sort of little Bible in some ways, because I know there's going, I'm going to be drawing pages and I'm going to think, right, how do I draw that brick wall? Ah,
well, yeah, did you see the little volume one on the bottom right hand corner of the book?
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God, there's going to be another one. Brilliant. Not,
The Robin and Lorenzo are smart. They're not, they're not stupid. They're in it for the love, but they're also
And that comes across when you meet them as well, doesn't it, really? They're just...
Yeah, they're great. They're legends. And they've done so... That's the thing about the Phoenix. Like, they are, you know, with in the days of the DFC, they've, like, tirelessly been up and down the country doing events and chatting to people and talking about stuff in the days of the DFC and the days of the Phoenix. And, like, they, you know, they've done so much hard work. They've done so much for so many young comic creators, like Zach. Mm. So in turn, it's like kind of like they've kind of brought them in and stuff. So they, I think they're really, I love them. I think they're fantastic. And I sort of wish them all the success they have.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. So there you go. Look, how many good names. I've got loads of show notes this week. All those creators I've got to write down.
Yeah.
I'm putting the show notes. But yeah, there's going to be no doubt much more Phoenix talk in the future. And I'm looking forward to getting my 4 issues at the very least. So, what issues were there again, Tom? No, I'm only joking.
They're all the same one, and you'll get them all in at the same time.
Yeah, but in different envelopes.
Yeah. I did put my name Mary on the envelope, so...
we don't send comments to Mary anymore.
Oh, so there you go. Yeah, that was the Phoenix talk for this week. Thank you very much, Tom. Tom's sticking with us. Pleasure. To talk some nonsense and comics, as always. And we've got a few shout outs this week, haven't we, gents?
Yep.
Is that it? Are you gonna say them? Who wants to go first?
Leamington first, so we're at Leamington Saturday.
Leamington Comic Con, 14th of April.
Yeah. We've got a table. I'm doing a panel with John Wagner at 11.
Yeah.
Come and see that. 2000 AD people, it's gonna be good. And then what time's our panel? I can't remember now, guys.
Is it 12:45? It's around it's around that time. We're going to have a little panel with Jay Gunn, the creator of Surface Tension, and plenty more exciting stuff to come. But we're just finalising the nonsense we're going to be talking about. But I think we'll skew it towards like just creating small press comics and
you want to start out and get on creating a comic. What should you be doing? What should you be thinking about? I think it's kind of where we're going to go, isn't it?
Some of the basic things that some people don't think about. And you know it's going to be this usual sort of nonsense that we'll come up with. But we're going to try and... no more F-bombs in this.
No, I hate it when we swear. It upsets me. So
you do it every time.
It upsets me.
Yeah, we're gonna try and record, see if we can get the audio as well. So keep your ears ears open for that in the future.
And it would be remiss of us not to mention that the same weekend, but on 2 days, the Saturday and the Sunday, the 14th and 15th, is Margate, the Margate Comics Art Festival, in Margate Winter Gardens. So if you're in the southern part of the country, Margate's quite a hipster place now. It's got it's got art galleries and all sorts down there now. I was there recently, and it's not quite what it used to be. I remember going down, just used to go down to Margate for a fight, but now it's quite arty. And I think they've got Lawrence Campbell, they've got Kieran Gillen, they've got lots of people there now, so that should be quite a thing as well. And Shane's obviously a friend of ours, so it'd be if you can't make Leamington, then there's that to go to as well. I'd like to give a little shout out. We got an email through from Stash Comics. We talked about their comic Primus about a year ago. Good graphic novel. Well, they're live on Kickstarter now with Colossal Chaos from Out of the Blue. It's a monster anthology where some of the proceeds go to a child literacy program. Well worth looking at. And I've seen some of the images on the Kickstarter. It looks fabulous. Really good stuff. Go over and have a look at that. My last one is I got Human Beings 5 through from Stuart McCune. Stuart McCune, if you want an example of how to run a Kickstarter program, he's the geezer. I've got to tell you, He uses it, in my opinion, like a pre-order system, very cleverly, and he puts out great product. As soon as you pay, seemingly, like a couple of weeks later, the book's on in your inbox, you know, really good stuff. Yeah. And I wrote a little review of it on Never Mind Anything this week, and well, not a review, more my thoughts on it. And the threads of the story are coming together. It's beginning to make... There's things are coming together that you think, oh, right, I didn't think of that. Interesting book, really good, and well worth a read. Yeah, they're my ones.
Nice. We would be remiss. Another convention that's happening on the 14th and 15th is Edinburgh Comic Con.
Of course it is. Christ. Yes. That's a busy weekend, isn't it?
It's a busy weekend on lots of different parts of the country. So, you know, it's not like you can't make that. You've got less than an excuse to say you can't make a comic convention coming weekend.
One about 4 yards from your house.
Yeah. Edinburgh Comic Con, 14th and 15th of April. Comic guests such as Gary Erskine. We've got here Robbie Rodriguez, Ian Kennedy, Mark Teixeira, Monty Nero.
Oh, he's at it, is he? Yeah. Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Oh, I love his work. Space Punisher, my friend.
Yeah. Oh, God, that craziness. Yeah. Dan McDade, Monty Nero, and I always wonder how to say this. Fabian, is it Nicieza?
Oh, Fabian. Yeah.
Fabian Nicieza. Is it?
Yeah. All right. He's there as well. They've got quite a lineup there. Bloody hell.
Yeah, they got
international guests there.
Yeah, there's also some film and TV guests, and like, I think there's a few independent comic people there as well. And if you're at the Yancey Street Awards, we were actually nominated for one, as was Dan Butcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking forward to hearing back about that. It'd be fantastic.
Down the Tube is nominated as well.
So to whoever nominated... just,
thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, we are very honoured to just be mentioned, to be honest.
We still consider ourselves outsiders, but it's nice to be nominated.
I'm surprised people listen. especially after like 140 odd weeks of this. I can't believe people are still listening. But we love each and every one of you, and no matter where you are in the country. Try to make it to some of these shows and like just interact with some of these amazing independent comic creators that you hear us talking to, because they're well worth it. So do we have any more shout outs?
That's it for me.
Yeah, I think that's it for me.
Oh, blimey. So I guess it's time for the recommendations. I tried to not sound like a game show host and I think I just failed.
Again. I like it when you do that. I like the Partridge and he comes back.
Yes, we're a comic show. We talk about comics, and every week we recommend some comics. So, who wants to go first?
Should we let our guests go first? Since we never do this,
we
don't do. Let's go first. Tom.
Yeah, Tom, go
what
for
would
it.
You like to recommend?
Can I recommend two things then?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so the comic I'm going to recommend is like a really old comic that basically is the comic that got me reading and I was obsessed with. It's basically quite racist now when you look back at it. It's one of those like, sorry. But it's also really interesting. It's called The Trigon Empire.
Oh, I love The Trigon Empire. Yeah, gorgeous.
So good, man. I always tell people to have a look at that because it's great. It's terrible Times New Roman font text, though, in all the captions. So apart from it making you feel sick when you read it, it's great. So there's that, but then the second thing I'm going to recommend is just this book I'm reading at the moment. I'm obsessed with like books like this, but it's by the guy who wrote Moneyball and The Big Short. It's called Michael Lewis, and it's called The Undoing Project. It's basically about the two Israeli psychiatrists, Kahneman and Tversky, who came up with all the kind of understanding about the errors in human decision making that underpins quite a lot of the economic theory that influences the world at the moment, and it's really really interesting.
Look at that.
Made it sound really boring though, haven't I?
But the thing is, some people will be like, did he just mention bum jokes 15 minutes ago and now he's talking about economics?
He's got a bum.
That's the phoenix. Bum economics.
Oh, nice.
That's all I've got.
Well, I've never heard of that Trigon Empire. I'm going to have to check that out.
Oh, mate, it's classic comics. Gorgeous stuff. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Is that available in like a collected edition?
It must be somewhere. It comes and goes a bit.
But it's always like £100 or something on eBay. It's wicked. It's well worth getting. It's amazing. Like, it's such a cool story.
Oh,
like,
God, just... I see what they mean about the text bubbles.
Yeah. That's pretty rough. But the art is just fantastic, and it's so good. It's like epic, really serious, epic, like emotional drama.
I'm trying to remember what it was in. Was it in Look and Learn? I can't remember
now. Look and Learn, yeah, Look and Learn.
Yeah, okay.
Incongruously in Look and Learn.
Like the speech bubbles kind of square with rounded corners, and all the text is left aligned.
Yeah. Left aligned.
All right, calm down. Graphic designer bunch.
There's no lettering in it, but the story is like, you imagine it's like reading it when you're like 10. You'd just be like mesmerized.
Yeah,
it's so good. So yeah, check it out.
Nice.
Who wants
Chenzo, to? Go on, you go next.
Oh, okay. Just a short, sharp, but very enjoyable read that I had recently. I was going to mention it last week, but I thought I'd save it for this week. It's one that a lot of our listeners are already big fans of. I was late to the game, so I decided to get some nice hardcover collections of it. And I'm talking about Giant Days.
Oh, yeah, you like this, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. This was... it's from Boom, or Boom Box, as it says on the back of the book. This is Giant Days, not on the test edition. This is volume one, full semester. Now, this is a comic that obviously has been around. It's an indie comic that's been around for quite some time now. I think they're on issue 37, 30, 38, whoa, something like that. Yeah, it's still going strong. Obviously, published by Boom. And there's lots of trades and stuff. And I was going to start at like volume one of the normal trades. But then when I saw that there was collected hardcovers, and I don't know about you, I've got a bit of a thing about like getting like big hardcover editions of like collections now. I think it started when I got the Sixth Gun volume one, like the oversized hardcovers. And I just, I don't know, I'm all about my shelf porn. Do you know what I mean? It just looks so nice.
Yeah.
And Giant Days, not on the test edition. I think it's the first 8 issues, all collected together. Now, created and written by John Allison. The chapters 1 to 6 are illustrated by Lisa Trayman. Chapters 7 and 8 is Max Sarin. There's also another issue in this, which is one of John Allison's original Giant Days comics that he did himself, self-published, before it went to Boom, I think. Colours by Whitney Kogar. Letters by Jim Campbell. We need to talk to Jim Campbell at some point. He letters everything, doesn't he? But this, it was definitely one that I've always wanted to read, but whenever I've tried, I vaguely sort of looked at later issues, if you know what I mean, you know, like issue, just say I wanted to read issue 24, I'd open it up and I was like, I don't quite know these characters, I don't know where I am. So I think it's a book that if you want to get in this series, go to the first episode, as it were, because within 3 or 4 pages, I was in. I'm a convert, just like everyone else, and I got to know these characters. The basic setup for Giant Days, it's set in basic university in England. Susan, Esther, and Daisy started at university and became fast friends, now away from home for the first time. The girls, along with their male hallmates, Ed and McGraw, find that college is more than academia and bad microwavable meals. In the face of holiday balls, hometown rivals, personal experimentation, and regretful hookups, they may be lucky just to make it past their freshman year. Now, anyone who's been to uni or school or whatever, this just felt, this was absolutely spot on. It's like a, it's almost like a sitcom in a sense. Like every issue felt like an episode of like a really good comedy show that had like, it was like part spaced, a bit of Skins, but just really, the characters are just really lovable. So many great jokes. There's a great pacing in it. The artwork's absolutely fantastic. I think the original artist, Lisa Trayman, I think is a Disney artist. I don't want to talk out of turn, but I think it has that sort of style to it all the way through. It's got consistency to it that I absolutely loved. Very clean, crisp artwork. Lots of visual gags, lots of facial humour. The facial acting in this is absolutely spot on. And I just absolutely obliterated all 8 issues. I just went through it, and like so much so that I've got the second book, not on the test edition, on order, and I'm not sure if the third one is available yet, but that's definitely going on the Amazon wish list. I know a lot of our listeners have said to us before, God, I love Giant Days. It's great. You know?
I think Rachel Smith quoted it, didn't she, as a big influence?
Yeah.
So, right, I think.
Yeah, you can see that. Yeah. I think you, yeah, can, yeah, you can see its influence in a lot of other books. I didn't it was kind of one of those things that I know it looked nice, but when I was reading it, I thought, well, maybe it won't live up to the hype. You know, in some ways, I was expecting to be let down on it. Partly, I think, because I picked, you know, I tried to look at a later issue but couldn't get into it. So I thought, am I not going to be able to access it? But like, as soon as I started, that was it. You know, getting on the ground floor, and this would be one of your favourite books, I think. I don't want to spoil much about it. There is brilliant jokes of all these different characters. McGraw is a character that I'm quite fond of. He's quite a hipster. He likes carpentry.
No surprise there.
Yeah. Well, you know. He probably eats at Pret a Manger. Don't we all?
I love that's the epitome of posh for you.
Yeah.
I love
Pret a Manger.
Yeah. Don't talk. Look, we were talking about Waitrose food earlier, Tony. And you confessed to me that you haven't eaten Waitrose food before.
No, I haven't, no.
No. So you've never experienced their potato dauphinoise?
I've made that up.
I have not made that up. Dan, you've heard of that, haven't you?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Tom, help me out here. Surely you've had a dauphinoise in your time. No.
Oh, that's the best thing ever.
Well, just let me know that I'm not on my own, people.
If you like dolphin potatoes,
it's not dolphin. I'm murdering the pronunciation, but it's lovely. It's potatoes and cheese. What more can you want? Anyway, yeah, get your hands on Giant Days, whether it's the normal trays, because they're great anyway, or just get it in general, because it's well worth your time. So I got it on Amazon. So there you go. Yeah,
cool. Right. Good. Daniel, do you want to go?
Yeah, we
we'll have a chat about my one. I sent you some. There's a little bit of a group discussion about my one in there. So do you want to go next?
Okay. Yeah. There was a Comixology sale in midweek, as there always is. You guys pointed out some great titles, so I jumped on there and bought about half a dozen. One of them was the NAM, which we talked about before in this show.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I want to hear about this.
Such a great comic. I remember reading this in a backup strip of something. It might have been G.I. Joe or Action Forces, it is called in the UK.
I think it was, mate. Yeah, I think it might have been. Yeah.
It was black and white, but on Comixology, it's actually in colour. I don't know if it was originally printed in colour or black and white. It's been done.
Yeah, originally a colour strip. Yeah.
Okay. Nice one. Yeah. It's written. What his influence looms large. Larry Hammer is the editor on it. Yeah. He did the G.I. Joe comics from day one, from the toy line. That TV show, The Toys That Made Us. If you've not seen that on Netflix,
so good.
It's really good.
Is he?
Yeah, because they talk about the fact that like they made this toy and we're going to get a storyline, and they just rock up to Marvel and say, right, we've got these characters.
Yeah,
and
make something up.
Yeah, because he had like all the background of the military, he did serve in Vietnam, I believe. Larry Hammer.
Okay, all right.
And so we wrote up all these characters and started doing the stories. And it was actually him that said, well, who are the bad guys? And that's where they made Cobra the bad guys off of the fact that you've got all these military guys, but they've got no one fighting them. So,
okay, okay.
Is that right, Vince?
Yes. Yeah. I believe so. They just had loads and loads of heroes, and they had absolutely no bad guys.
You said, well, how am I going to write a comic with no one fighting them? Anyway,
because you had the G.I. Joe characters. The G.I. Joe toy line originally was just based on loads of different versions of the same hero. So you never had the Action Man villain, did you? It was always just Action Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, swinging it back to the NAM, it's actually written by a chap called Doug Murray, and the first book, at least, is drawn by Michael Golden, which is he's a massive influence on me. And
and his Micronauts stuff as well, I loved it.
So really good.
You look at some of the stuff that was drawn in like 1986, and it's like a cinematography from an action film nowadays. The angles, the composition, the kind of stuff that he's forcing action to like the extreme. The rendering of characters goes from kind of being quite realistic to kind of cartoony and over exaggerated, but it never feels out of place.
It was weirdly very much of its time, because there was a little spate of Vietnam movies that came out around that as well. You had Full Metal Jacket and
Platoon
and Saigon and all these sort of movies that came out. So it was people were definitely remembering that period back then, you know?
Yeah, because it ran from, was it 86 to 1992 or something like that. This actual NAM series.
Quite a run,
I
isn't it?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. There was three volumes, I think, available on there, wasn't there? I think.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. For 69p each.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's great.
There was an article, I read an article with where Brevoort was asked about that at one of the things at C2E2 this weekend. I think it was the retailer conference type thing. Mm-hmm. And he said, Marvel have got nothing to do with that pricing. That is Comixology doing that. Because there's a couple in there. I think I pointed one out to you, Vince, which was the new Jim Starlin, is it a sort of cosmic series, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Dark Side. There's, not Dark Side.
Thanos.
Thanos, yeah. There's, then that's only just come out, but it was 69p. Oh. So he's saying it was Comixology who sorted that out, not him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
They've made a lot of money from me from those sales.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. £4.50, but I bought about 6,000 pages.
I did get a Masters of Kung Fu one as well.
Oh, nice. Man, how gorgeous is that?
Yeah, great.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
Yeah, so the NAM kind of follows a dude. I think his name's Marks. He's like a rookie, green, sort of going in. And every issue, you sort of see him or certain characters go through certain events. And there's a month between each issue. So... the story jumps on a month, and it goes right from the start of the 1965 to 1973 when the Vietnam War wraps up.
If you think about that, that's very, you know, that's quite clever considering people will read it and real then they've got to wait a month to pick up the issue. So it's almost it's real time comics, isn't it?
Yeah, and you've got like the big events like the Tet Offensive in that pops up in the comics. So if people know their history, you can kind of, oh shit, they got this fucking massive great big thing rocking up soon. But even in the first couple of issues, like they go into Saigon and get up to some hijinks. And it's a strange comic in as much that it's presented quite jovial, and the characters sort of, although some of them come to harm, they do seem to have a bit of a kind of an armor around them that this is a comic. But you can just read it, there's a real grittiness, and you know that this shit went down and it was fucking 100 times worse.
Yeah.
So it's incredible. Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, I must give this a read, dude. Yeah, I must do.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they sort of go into like this a kind of nightclub in Singapore, and there's like the girls come over with them, and one of them gets kind of ripped off, and it's like, this isn't being made up. Like, there's the guy must have gone through this or done some shitload of research, because it feels so genuine.
Yeah, but these were comics, like, when I read them, like, when they were collected in the back of the Punisher Weekly comics, you know, I was a kid. I know they said it was for mature readers, but, you know, I could, even though I didn't know anything about Vietnam then, it was just, it was a good comic story, and it was told really well.
You know? Yeah.
That's, again, sent a last shout-out to Michael Golden. Like, he just does, like, the architecture, the vehicles, everything just looks like, it's like taken from a photo or something, but it's, you know, it's not, it's hand drawn. Just amazing.
He's almost got a slightly cartoony look to the faces, which gives them more life than
allows them to play facial acting more, doesn't it? I think, you know,
And I remember, I won't say the name of the character, but when I was a kid, one of the characters gets taken out by a sniper, and it's one of the mainer characters. And the way that was visually done, it wasn't great. It was one of those very, you didn't see it, but, you know, I think you saw the helmet fall away. He was standing there, and all of a sudden he's not there, and a cigarette is falling through the air, and the helmet's falling through the air. And it's one of the most striking ways to sort of like a character death that I had ever seen, because felt it, and you didn't see what he looked like afterwards. There was nothing graphic. From then, after that moment, it sort of snapped forward to the characters' ways of dealing with it and how they're all like really depressed about it and stuff. And that stuck with me. You know, good comics do that. You don't have to be graphic. You don't have to shove it in someone's face, a character death. It, you know, good comics are timeless in that way, I think.
Yeah,
get the NAM. If you ever see it on sale, never mind if it's on sale, if you see the NAM anywhere, because you won't find
it. You'll get some back issues. I think you'll find them at comic arts and conventions and stuff like that. There's bound to be some about them.
Do pick it up, because it's just very, very good comics, I think. Yeah, brilliant. So, okay then, Tony, sign us off. What have you got this week?
Well, I was going to try and do. I texted you earlier today that I was on my like third choice because I was going to go with a comic called The Man Who Loved Breasts, and I thought, oh no, everyone will just say I've done that on purpose because we've got the Phoenix on a kids comic, you know. And then I thought, oh, well, I'd look at something called The Furry Trap, and no, that's not suitable either. I've got a brilliant. There's something going on there that I'm not happy with.
I just took a drink of water. Did you have to say that then?
So I've gone with Iron Fist 79. Another Marvel book, look at us. But I'm a big fan of the sort of street level martial arts comics, as we all know it from Marvel. It's written by Ed Brisson. Artist is Damien Conquero. Colours by Andy Troy. And Jeff Decal is the cover artist. Now, we had a conversation before we come online, because we will often say, oh, what are you talking about this week? Just make sure we don't sort of, you know, all do the same thing or something. And I mentioned this, and I sent you some of the covers and some of the interior art to this. And I don't think the covers do the interior art justice.
No,
they do absolutely really no don't. Justice. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just... Because usually they're falling, like, people are falling over themselves to do cover work. So
yeah.
I don't understand the approach here.
I don't know whether they're seemingly tied into this, almost just this one artist. There's one exception, I think, two exceptions as the series goes on, if you ignore variants. But it's sort of, don't they just sort of very photorealistic, very sort of banal.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say underdrawn, and I'm not being unfair with that. It's just whole parts of the page on the cover just don't seem to be filled in for some reason.
Yeah.
They're done digitally, and there's this. It doesn't seem to be worked enough, and it needs like there's.
Yeah,
it's not strong enough to just sit on its own. It needs more work. What's been done, in my opinion.
There's no depth to the image, which is something, especially this one, issue 79. It's something you pointed out, Dan. There's no sort of depth to the image. He's rushing at two hands at a sort of. There's clearly like demonic hands because he's got little spikes on them and they're red. He's rushing towards them with his chi flaming in his hand. But it looks like the hands are on either side of him.
That makes
sense.
I didn't even notice the spikes. They look like they've been added on afterwards.
They do a bit, don't they? Mm. Yeah, they do, mate. Yeah, no, I see that now. Yeah, and there's sort of meant to be blood on the floor, and it's all a bit digital and I don't know. There's sort of flare on the body. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, but you look inside.
But inside, it completely fucking... I am a complete convert to this geezer. I'll give you a little summary. So this is part of the Damnation storyline. This is zipping across a few of the Marvel issues. I think Doctor Strange, Ghost Rider, and maybe one other. Doctor Strange used magic to resurrect Las Vegas after the entire city was destroyed. But with its resurrection came the new Hotel Inferno, a demonic casino run by Hell Lord Mephisto to lure poor unfortunates to gamble their souls away. Iron Fist was recruited to help fight against Mephisto, but was sidetracked when he found the hotel's arena announcing Iron Fist as their main draw. Danny was further shocked to see Orson Randall, a previous and deadly Iron Fist, earning his latest victory in the fighter's octagon. Now, does anyone remember Orson Randall from previous Iron Fist, from the Immortal Iron Fist?
He's like the wasn't it the pulp one?
He's the pulp one. Yeah. So he's got a couple of sort of 45s, bandages on his hands. It's more a sort of, he's more in clothes than costume, but he wears a sort of similar sort of hood over his head with the eyes on it. I love Iron Fist the comic, but Orson Randall is really one of my favourite characters to come out for a long time now. So it opens on the casino locker room where Orson's sitting in the bench by the lockers, and he's sitting there sort of head in hands, weary, and there's sort of his hands are sort of bandaged, but there's blood dripping off them. And Danny Rand and Fat Cobra, who's a recurring character, who's a cracking character, who keeps saying, what happens when you get a victory? Do you get maidens? And Danny keeps saying, you can't really say that, Fat Cobra. You know, it's like this sort of thing. And they're surprised to see Orson there because he died in Immortal Iron Fist. Number six, he did die, in fact, and that is part of the continuity. But in the deal with Mephisto, he has to win 24 fights in 24 hours.
And I love that concept.
It's just simple, but just so good. And then a sort of demonic Don King, blinged up Don King, comes in, who's the fight promoter, who's called D'Kay, which if you say it aloud is Decay.
That's a little bit cheesy.
Orson has just won his last fight, so he's won 10 out of 24, so he's got 14 more to go. and he asked Danny to watch his back, but unfortunately Danny gets called away for some other reason, which I won't ruin it because I think you should read this to speak to Decay again. There's a female locked in a torture cell elsewhere in hell. It's basically gladiatorial kung fu fights, and the winner escapes from hell. How fucking great is that?
God, sign me up. Jeez.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a twist as well, but you're going to expect that because Mephisto's involved, isn't he? You know, there's some twist that's going on. I'm really enjoying this run of Iron Fist. The previous issues have had Shang-Chi in and Sabretooth in sort of major arcs, and now you've got Orson Randall. Damien's art is absolutely on point. Yeah. Absolutely, just that perfect combination of character. It's not photorealistic, but he gets superb action in it. The fights are absolutely brilliant. Why they're not using this geezer on the cover, I have no idea.
Yeah, I think this is a massive case for using... I mean, obviously, there's time's a factor, I guess, but, you know, like, go old school, have the artist and the interior do the cover and have it, like, really pulpy, because you just...
Yeah,
just
that's where
out.
They could go with this. I mean, this is not a stock footage cover because it actually describes in some way what's going on in the comic. So it's not as if we've got a load of pictures of Iron Fist, we'll start using them in the comic. They're actually specific to what's going on inside in the most part. You know, so why they're not sort of getting other people to do it, I don't know. It's just strange.
I think it'd be interesting if we posted up the cover and a page of the interior on the group talk on our Facebook group, just to see what you guys out there, you know, think about how covers and interior art are treated.
Yeah,
I think a bit of discussion
going
there. I'd
put a selection of what's on the outside and what's on the inside. So you see that on a shelf. I'm buying Iron Fist. It's on my pull list. You know, I would buy it anyway because I'm a sad freak. But I would be going on and on about this book, and it sat there for a couple of weeks in my to read pile until I pulled it out. These last two issues, which he's only been in 78 and 79, this new artist. But I thought, bloody hell, this is amazing. This is now my go-to book. Yeah. You know, I'd look on Twitter at Damien Concario's previous work, and I forgot he did the Sons of Anarchy comic, which is where I'd seen him before. And did really well on it, and really, really good design. At one point, Orson fights a sort of demonic biker, this sort of huge man beast of a thing, and he fights him, and you can see where the influences are coming from back in those days, you know. Just great demon designs as well. There's like a little, at one point, Danny's saying, "Oh, you know, you can't make me do anything because I've kicked all the heads in of all your demons." He says, "No, there's more, look." And he turns around, there's a sort of army of demons walking in the office, and they're all different. They're all designed differently, but with a bit of character about them. Really, really nice work. Ed Brisson is writing a great story, simply told, but with a lot of nice little character points. A good story arc. This is going to make a great trade to pick up.
Yeah.
You can find Ed Brisson at www.edbrison.com. Ed Brisson. You can find Damien at www.damien.com. And then Conceiro Conceiro.tumblr.com. I should be going back to that Tumblr constantly to see when these pages are available to buy, because I'm going to buy one of them because they are gorgeous.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, really good. And I genuinely think this is a guy on the rise at Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, definitely so.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So there you go, folks. Don't judge a book by its cover, but, you know, make sure you have a look through on the interiors. And that's not to say that these covers are the worst thing we've ever seen, because I think that's unfair.
No.
That's unfair.
Yeah, that's
to
true. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've seen West Coast, not West Coast Avengers, Great Lakes Avengers.
Great Lakes Avengers. Oh, well, yeah. It's just, but these covers, they're okay, they're functional, but it's more like the artwork that I probably would have seen on a trading card back in the 90s.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Than something that should
be. Yeah, that's a good shout.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Tons of amazing comics this week for you all to check out. And a quite highbrow economic novel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
It's not that highbrow, though. It's not very highbrow.
I'll tell you what, you've made us more legit than we've been in quite some time.
it's more about why you make terrible decisions.
Oh,
well,
as a human being,
well,
I've got a trilogy in me.
I tell you what, after 144 weeks, I could tell you a few stories.
No, it's great. It makes you feel better. It's like, oh, it's not because it's me. It's because I'm human, and humans are idiots. It's not me.
That's true. If there's anything that we've learned from this show, it's this: is general public are idiots, and humans are terrible. So there you go. But we hope that you all have enjoyed this week's show, folks. It's been a good laugh. I've had a fun one, another cracker one. Another great week with a great guest, and we've got so much more to come, haven't we?
Yeah, keep on rocking.
Yeah, we're being nice about you, Tom. Be quiet. We're being nice.
Yeah, I know. When I go, you can slag me off.
Oh, yeah, we will. The troll campaign will begin.
Me and Mary, we're on you.
Oh, yeah. But we hope you enjoyed it, folks. And be sure to let us know what you thought of the show and anything. If we got anything wrong, like if I said a name wrong, like I normally do, then there's several different ways you can get in touch with us to run us the right act. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've read Awesome Comics and you want to send us a reader letter, we've had a couple, but we'd like
one in today, didn't we?
We had one in this very day. Then send it to the editor of the letters column, Tony Esmond, and you can find because when he's not in a public toilet, he'll be found at his email, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Bring it on.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Prepare for the thunder, Tony. yes, follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll just talk about upcoming guests. And don't forget that every Thursday we have our hashtag Kickstarter call out. Let us know.
Fridays, Thursdays.
No other day of the week, because otherwise we'd be doing it all the time. And there's not enough. There's so many comic Kickstarters at the moment, there's not enough time in the day. So if you've got a comic.
Stick Paul Duffield in there, though. Stick Paul's Firelight Island there. It's great.
There's going to be a link for that in the show notes. So thanks for that. I'll write that on my list. No, but if you've got comics Kickstarter, tweet us at The Awesome Pod on Thursdays, and we will retweet it and shout the word and get the word out. So there you go. And now, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicpodcast and like us. That's what trendy people do, isn't it? No, Facebook's not trendy at the moment, is it?
Yeah, I'm all over the Snapchat, me.
Oh.
I don't even know what that is.
It's not what you think it is, Tony.
Oh, isn't it? Oh, God. Yeah.
Swipe left.
Yeah, I've taken it at a good angle. What?
Oh. What, from above? Anyway. Yeah, if you do Facebook, there's one place that you want to go to Facebook for, and that's the group Awesome Comics Talk, where we get lots of comics fans, lots of comic creators, all kinds, and they're discussing comics. There's none of this cheap sales talk. We want to hear you discuss comics topics,
advice on comics, and it's good. Been really useful this week.
Whenever someone goes onto that page and then asks for advice about, like, you know, how to lay out a page, or how do people write their scripts or anything, that I look at it and think, that was the reason that we set this up. I'm very pleased with that. Keep joining the group, folks, because it's well good. Now, thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. Leave us a review on iTunes. Helps get the word out about this little show, and therefore more people will find out about great comics. Whether you listen to us on the Stitcher network, the Podnose network, the Podknife network, and what other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Bumson Burner.
I didn't want to laugh, but I love a play on words. Have you written that down?
No, I sent you that thing about farting mailer I wrote this week.
Oh, God.
Troops, get the Troops mailer this week, and there's a little tip about how to contain your wind at convention tables.
Oh, God, always comes back to bums,
doesn't it? Yeah. Does seem to
on this show,
always.
Oh, my God.
That bum gauge is in sore need on this show.
Don't.
I wonder if it's an app. Look up bum gauge.
Like a clap meter.
Someone I knew was talking about an app they had called Bumble, and I thought you said bumhole.
That'd be a good app.
Maybe there's... you can find others in your area. In your local
when somebody
area.
Orders a latte, you think they're saying bumhole. You know what I mean?
What? I'm not going to the coffee shops that you go to. Anyway.
I like my coffee like I like my women. Bitter.
Oh, dear. And expensive.
Yeah.
So where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk. There's about four going out this week. Been a busy week. Nice. Including something with Mr. Butcher in. It's the illustrations in Meta Worlds. Yeah, got a lot of reads on that actually. Very good. Oh, or Ezohyz on Twitter.
Nice. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. Tom, once again, thank you for joining us and listening to us.
Cheers, Tom.
Ramble on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was good. It was really nice of you.
You are welcome back anytime.
Yeah.
Where can people find out more about the comic? I don't know whether you're on social media. You're probably one of the sensible people who isn't.
I'm not, no.
You're a wiser man than us.
Yeah.
But the Phoenix is at Phoenix Comic UK on Twitter, and then Phoenix Comic on Facebook, and then thephoenixcomic.co.uk. is our website where you can get our fantastic 4 issues for £1 offer.
There you go.
So you got no excuse, folks. So go forth, read lots of comics. Thanks for listening. And from Dan, Tony, Tom, and myself, have a brilliant week. And as always, stay awesome.
See ya.